Welcome to Lo-Fi Lit. My name is Tyler Byrne. This is a fancy little podcast where I host writers, poets, and anyone else that I'm currently interested in. Today, I'm talking to Alexandra Naughton. She is the author of Sick of Being Inside Myself, a collection of fantastic poetry. This has been published by House of Vlad. Let's go to the show. Thank you for listening. Go pick it up. Did you like the reading?
Yeah, I thought it was cool. It went like really late, and I'm not used to staying up that late, and I'm still kind of like recovering from that.
Yeah. So I saw that you run your own readings.
I do. Yeah.
How do you go about setting those up?
I have a co-host, and we just kind of talk about who we are thinking about asking for the next reading and just reach out to them. It's usually people who we're already familiar with in the community, or sometimes it's people that come to our events and share that they want to perform. I try to keep in mind like people who have books coming out or whatever, or like it's fun to have like out of town people come sometimes. But yeah, like just, I think that's kind of how like every reading series happens. Like if you go to events and you're like an active member of the literary scene, I feel like you're more likely to get asked to read. If you don't go out ever, like people just forget that you exist. So yeah,
there has to be like a cool scene though. I feel like it's like in Tulsa, I don't feel like there's a scene, and even if there were, I'm not even aware of it. So that's why I try to do everything on the internet. But how long you're in Philadelphia, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How long have you guys been running the series?
We've been doing Bring a Blanket reading series since I guess like 2023, so not super long. We just celebrated our second anniversary of it. We typically only do it like April through November, because it's an outdoor daytime reading series, and it just gets kind of gross in the winter. Like nobody wants to like sit outside in the winter time. So yeah.
Do you have to get like permits to like do it outside?
No.
It's a
public park, so people are always doing fun things at Washington Square. Like one day we were doing a reading and there was a big group of people like 10 yards away with one of those like rainbow parachute things, and they were just like doing the parachute up and down, and people were running underneath, and like people like do wedding photography at the park. Like sometimes that's happening in the background, which is like it's fun. Like yeah, I wouldn't even think to like ask for a permit. Maybe we're supposed to. We did a reading once. My friend Amy Berkowitz came from San Francisco, and she had a new book out, and she was wearing black, and two other people were wearing black, and they were all reading from the same document, and a cop walked by, and they were like, is this a funeral? I don't know why. I guess it was they were wearing black, but yeah.
So did it help, has the reading series helped like piqued your interest back into poetry, or has it helped morph your interest anyway?
Yeah, I think it definitely helps me stay connected to the community, and I think participating in any sort of literary event, just it's a good way to not only just stay in touch with people, but kind of re-inspire you in terms of writing. Like it's, I don't want to say like poetry or literature is competitive, but it does kind of like get your juices flowing to see other people be in their element. So, yeah, I think it's a good way to stay engaged with the
Yeah,
crowd.
totally.
Yeah.
What's like the perfect amount of readers, do you think, for like an outdoor reading that you do?
I would say three or four. We've done more. I always want to give people like 20 minutes to read, and no one ever does the full 20. But the good thing about our reading series, at least for me, is we're outside. There's like other things happening. You're not like in some stuffy room, you're outside. You can feel the breeze. You can see like the tree leaves above you. There's squirrels running around. So there's other things happening. So it's not, I don't know. Like, I think it makes it feel like a shorter, it doesn't feel like a chore. Some readings can be a chore, but being outside, I think, is just really refreshing.
Have you ever gone to the space and there was like it was like too muddy or there was like dog shit everywhere?
Oh my God, yeah. Oh, someone stepped in dog shit at our last reading. It sucked. One reading we had got totally rained out, which was a super bummer, but people still showed up.
Oh,
We had to like
cool.
go under an awning at a building across the street. That sucked. That really sucked. But all the readers showed up, and we had a reader from Boston, Massachusetts, who was featuring. I felt really bad for him that he came all the way down, and it was like a literal hurricane happening.
Oh,
Yeah.
sweet.
Yeah.
So, okay, where does your journey begin with poetry? Were you writing poetry in high school?
Yeah, high school and before high school. I would make like little books, when I was younger. I would make like comics and stuff, and writing's just always been super fun for me. I wrote a book or I wrote a poem for I just wrote a poem about the old man who lived in the house across from where I grew up. I wrote this when I was like 11, and I called it My Window. And I was like trying to imagine his perspective. He would sit by the window all day. And that was like probably the first serious poem that I wrote, and it got published in my summer camp yearbook.
Oh, wow.
I wish I still had a copy of that, but yeah, I've always liked poetry.
Who
I
taught
don't.
you like to poetry at first?
You know what? I don't know if this is the jumping off point, but when I would stay at my Aunt Brenda's house, I love my Aunt Brenda. Like, she's my mom's sister. I would go over her house for sleepovers, and to like lull me to sleep, she would read me poetry, like British romantic
Oh,
poetry.
wow.
So I was getting like Lord Byron at a very young age, and I don't remember any of the poems that were read to me, but just that experience, I think, maybe did something.
Now, are you going to do that with your kid?
Yeah, my husband reads our 3-year-old The Pied Piper of Hamelin by Robert Browning like every night.
Mean, what that's like. I feel like as a kid that might be boring, but I think like as you get older you probably appreciate that.
Yeah, she loves it. She
Yeah.
like yeah. So I think we're doing something right. Yeah.
But when you were a kid, did you like were you into it or were you like, oh, this is I hate this?
No, I thought it was cool. I don't think I understood what was being read to me, but it felt grown up, Like, this is not a kid's book. This is something that I don't really quite understand, but it felt special. And I think because I love my Aunt Brenda, it was just like a special thing. Yeah.
When it was she like explaining what was going on, or was she like
I
just
think
like
she did. Yeah, I think she tried her best to like explain to me, like seriously, like a 7 or 8-year-old child, like what was happening in the poem.
Now, has she come to any of your readings or bought any of your books?
No.
Oh, that's surprising.
I don't really, she only recently moved back to Philadelphia, so she was living in Wildwood, New Jersey for a long time. But I should invite her to a reading. That would be fun.
Does she know you're like an that she was an early like influence?
I think I just realized it during this conversation. Like
Oh, wow.
I've had that memory, but like I never really made that connection, and I should tell her. I'm gonna see her soon.
Yeah, she'd probably like that, I feel like.
Yeah.
So when do you get okay, when do you start like going into the alt-lit scene? Or did you ever consider yourself part of that scene?
Yeah, so I started making zines in 2010. Had a blog.
What was the blog?
Oh God. It was called The Tsarina Says. It was dumb, right? But it was like a blogspot blog. It was where I got to like type out all my thoughts. I would update it every day. It was basically just about what my life was like in San Francisco at the time. Like little adventures that I would go on for myself. I was unemployed at the time, and it was just a way for me to feel like I had something going on. But yeah, I updated it all the time, and I made friends through like internet forums, who also blogged. But I didn't, and I started making zines, yeah, back in 2010, and I would advertise them on my blog. I also rapped. It was like a
You rap?
SoundCloud rapper. Yeah, like it's I think that they're all deleted, all my songs, but yeah, I was a SoundCloud rapper back in
Wow.
like 2009, 2010. And the zines were really just a way for me to try publishing, try making my own books, and like publish my own writing along with the writing of my friends. But I didn't know anything about alt-lit. I was not connected to that community until 2012. I like started dating someone who I'm not going to name them. They had a reading series, and they were very connected in the alt-lit scene, and we dated, but I got involved in his literary space, and I think he did not like that.
Ooh.
And it made me just want to be better than him. And we broke up, but I became friends with a lot of his friends, and they stopped talking to him after we broke up. Which, yeah, I don't want to get into any of that, but I didn't know about anything alt-lit until like 2012, and I think I felt kind of amused by it, but also I think my mental state at the time made me also want to feel like I was above it, which is not really a good way and not a good perspective to have when you're like approaching a community, but I liked it, but I also thought that it was kind of dumb. And it was kind of dumb,
Yeah,
but
I think everyone felt like that.
yeah, okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't feel guilty for that. So, did you get into Tumblr? Like,
Yeah, I had a Tumblr.
okay. What was your rap name?
My rap name was Malphus. I don't even I yeah. My email address is hedgemonster@gmail.com. I took like a poli sci class my first semester of college, and I thought like I was being funny.
Did you ever rap Paul Hanson Clark?
No. You know what though? I might have because I used to drink, and one of the first times I met him, I was wasted at AWP, and I kept singing Bright Eyes to him. And I probably tried to rap battle him, but I don't really remember.
That's funny. Did you ever like do a magazine back in the day? And like when you were wait, I know you don't want to talk about the boyfriend, but when you broke up with him, were you like so much better than him that the friends talked to you and they stopped talking to him because he was so bad?
Well, he was kind of a scumbag. He would make
Oh.
people feel really uncomfortable, and like he made me feel really uncomfortable. He videotaped himself strangling me while I was taking
Ew.
a nap. Yeah, like he was a fucked up person, and I had just gotten out of like a 4 year long relationship where I thought I was gonna marry this person. And I like immediately started dating this guy who I did not know. He was my Facebook friend, but I thought he was a girl at first. I think he just caught me like in a really vulnerable time, and I didn't really know what I had signed up for in dating him. He was not a good person.
That's fucked up.
Yeah.
Like videotaping someone, that's like psychopath behavior.
Yeah. He did lots of bad
Yeah.
things.
So okay, so you break up with him and then you start you're more into the community. When do you meet like Ketch? Were you friends with her?
I met Catch. Oh, gosh. I want to say it was like 2013 or 2014. We had a Steve Rogenbeck reading at the house where I was living. And Catch came and made Muddy Buddies or something like that, some sort of like dessert with Chex Mix. And like, it was, yeah, she was handing that out. I made pasta salad and like served that at this reading event that we had at the house where I was living in Oakland with Matt Takeuchi. I think that was the first time I met Catch. I made pasta salad and gave her pasta salad.
Was she riding at the time?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
And that's Oakland, California?
Oakland, California. Yeah.
Wow. How long were you there for?
I lived in the Bay Area for 14 years. I moved there
Whoa.
in, yeah, I moved there in 2008 and I left in 2022, when I was pregnant with my first baby.
So was there a scene down there?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There's like a bunch of small insular scenes in the Bay Area. You've got like the academic poets, you've got like the dirtbag poets, you've got the old like North Beach wannabe beat culture poets. There's like, yeah, there's so many different scenes. There's the slam poetry community. They don't really intersect that much, which I was always trying to like force them to merge by trying to like invite people from different communities to read at one event and see if like I could get people to hang out with each other. But it was really hard to do that, and I don't know.
Yeah, I tried to do that online and like people just don't respond to it. Like they if they don't know each other, they do not want to come to it. And then like the audience like doesn't show up. It's like, okay, I'm just gonna like have friends come on.
What do you think that's about?
I have no idea. I think
Yeah.
people just don't wanna they just wanna hang out and like be with their friends, I guess.
Yeah.
And not try to challenge outside, because I think it takes more energy if you don't know the people and you don't know how they're going to respond.
Yeah. I get that's totally true, but I think I'm in a place right now. I don't know. I think I've always been in a place where I would rather try to make new friends doing these events and like
Or find a new audience, you know?
find a new audience. Yes, maybe some people aren't going to get it, but someone in the audience probably will and will connect with it. Yeah, I've only done a few readings where I've been like, wow, that totally sucked. I should have just stayed home. And usually it's because I had to like travel super far to get there or something and like
Wow.
no one showed up. But yeah, I think most of the time it's like, it's always worth it. It's always fun in its own way.
Yeah. So how did you come to writing your first book?
I wrote that. The first book I wrote was I Will Always Be Your Whore, Love Songs for Billy Corgan. And I wrote that when I was like in the middle of breaking up with that bad guy. And he and Billy Corgan are the same age, I'm pretty sure. So
Oh.
like, yeah, so like they're like love poems, but they're also just like questioning that relationship and trying to respond to how I was feeling at that time about that person through the music of the Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah. So, okay, you published the first book. What's the kind of response that you get?
I think I was like actually really pleasantly surprised by the response I got from that book. I never, published a book of my own poetry before. So I didn't really know what to expect, but the fact that, people bought the book and people liked the book. There were a lot of people who didn't like the book also, but I went on tour for it and just, I got a great response. I thought like I got to meet a bunch of people that I would not have met otherwise. And
What did
yeah.
you learn? What did you learn from putting it together that you've applied throughout your career?
I think I learned how to organize a book and try to create a mood that continues throughout the book by arranging the poems in a specific way, thinking of it as like one cohesive thing, even though they're separate poems. The book that I put out right after that, had no titles, so every page was a new poem, but it was meant to be read, front to back pretty much with you could read the pieces separately, but it works as just like a long form piece. I also did something where I would like every song or every poem in that book corresponds to a Smashing Pumpkins song, so that's something else that I thought about, just creating a mood that way, like thinking about how the song relates to the poem and how it would sound on a playlist if you put all of the songs together like that.
Now, did you record the pumpkin smashing the songs while you're reading the poems and then put that on the internet?
I did not, no.
Okay.
My dad did that actually. He recorded me during one of my readings and like played the songs like in post-production, like put the songs underneath whatever I was reading.
But that's cool of him.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah, I don't. You don't usually see parents being like supportive.
Yeah, my dad was like very supportive of my career. And he still buys the zines, but like, I don't think I want him reading this new book.
So, who are you reading at the time? Like from your first to your second to your third, and does it change and does it inflect what the how the writing occurs in the books?
Yeah. I don't really read poetry.
Oh, okay.
I read my friend's poetry. And like I'll read stuff that I see posted online, but I don't really read poems anymore.
That's what Paul's friend does, Justin something.
Oh, Jesse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's certain poets that I love whose work like I'll still go back to, like Diane de Prima. But I just don't really read poetry, and maybe that's a bad thing, but I read tons of fiction, so I think that informs my work. I don't really remember who I was reading at the time of that first book coming out. I was probably like, yeah, I don't know.
So,
Maybe in
okay, so
class,
you're
probably.
on the latter half of the five, six, seven, eight, nine books. Did you see a drop off from people in the community, and what kept you writing?
Did I see a drop off in the community?
Of poets, like, stop writing? Because a lot of people, they would publish like one or two books and then completely stop writing or just leave. Or like
Yeah.
when alt lit wasn't popular anymore, everyone kind of dispersed and went di di in their different ways.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people just stopped and dropped off the face of the earth, and you don't see them online anymore. A lot of my friends like are still publishing, so
That's good.
yeah.
Do you wish Catch still wrote?
Catch does still write.
Does she?
Yeah.
Where?
I don't think she shares as much as she used to, but
Oh.
she definitely still writes.
Okay.
And she's working on something.
She is.
Yeah.
Are you gonna go to her wedding?
She didn't invite me, but maybe that hasn't been planned yet. I don't know. I think she's coming to my birthday party this weekend, so.
Oh, you can ask her then.
Yeah. Has she planned her wedding?
I think, well, what Austin told me is that like they're doing it in like someone's backyard. It's like gonna be very small.
Okay.
And I was pestering him for me to go, so. But they are gonna do Catch Fest this year or next year.
Yeah.
So I heard that you went to Catch Fest.
Yeah,
I didn't know you had gone, and then everyone started ribbing me about that. When were you there? What day were you there?
I was there the whole time.
Oh.
Yeah, I read at the first night's event.
Okay.
The About It Press had a reading. I had Jesse Prado read for me, my friend Cordelia Chadwick, and Violet Geringer was there too, I think, and she read. Yeah, I was there the whole time, and I think I even came to Denver like a couple days early because I read for something called Punk-a-Tree. And then the next night we went to something else called Jazz-a-Tree. It's like the first night it was like we had a punk band playing backup music
That's
during our
cool.
sets, which was really cool.
I can see fiction informing your poetry because in the book there are some pieces that seemed like they were influenced by fiction. Like the one with the, she's like w walking on a treadmill and like watching television.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like that.
Thank you.
Because it offers something, a different pacing in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's arranged in such a way that there's like a piece of fiction in each section.
How did you order the sections in this one?
I think I just wanted to mix it up a bit, so it wasn't like there were a lot of newer pieces, and there were some pieces that I wrote during the pandemic, and there were also pieces that I wrote nearly 10 years ago. And I wanted to make them not feel like they were all bunched up in like their own separate sections. So just trying to spread them out and make it feel harmonious. There's like a bunch of poems that I wrote specifically for a Sopranos themed reading that I did last year.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I read this thing and like I wrote probably like 10 brand new pieces from the perspective of Adriana Lacerva. And I didn't want it, yeah, I didn't want the book to feel like, okay, here's like the soprano section. But I really like the pieces, and I feel like they are, they're me as much as they are like trying to imagine what this character would think about certain things or like responding to certain things.
It was like a dramatic monologue.
Yeah, there's a few dramatic monologues.
Have you ever done like a formal poetry, like sestinas and sonnets and stuff?
I think I wrote a sonnet in high school. It's just like not how I think.
Yeah.
And I think that people who do them, that's really cool. It's like doing math problems for me. Like I could do it if I sat down and tried, but like I don't know if I would feel good about it. I took a writing workshop where we were supposed to write like one formal poem, and I picked a random formal poem or formal style that I thought I could work with. And that poem is in the collection as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Cool, cool. Do you want to read one?
Sure.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Is there one that you want to hear?
No, just choose what you would like, what you're vibing with. Or the one with the barnacle. There's a barnacle one.
A barnacle?
Yeah, there's a barnacle and gum and something else.
With gum?
Yeah. And a shoe.
Oh, I think I know. Okay, yeah. Why is she always copying me? She's staring at me, pulling my hair, sticking her tongue out. Stop copying me. A barnacle or shadow. Some sticky gum on my favorite sole. Forget it. The further she moves away, I get smaller.
I like that. Before, when you found the poem, you kind of made a face.
I like that poem. It got rejected, so.
Oh, it did? From where?
From Ben Fama's thing.
Oh. Well, you put it in a book, so it doesn't matter.
I put it in a book. Yeah. But you know, like, I don't think I've ever read that one to an audience before. So everyone has their favorites. I feel like I have my hits and the ones that, like, I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit ashamed of that one because it got rejected.
It does come from like a younger voice, I think, from what the rest of the book.
Mm-hmm.
But it also seems like a riddle in a way.
Yeah.
So you said that you have poems that you wrote 10 years ago. Do you still keep those poems around? And like when you're creating a new book, you're like, oh, this would fit?
Yeah. I kept them around because I liked them. You know, I had them. I think I had gotten them published in different magazines. And just like, this deserves to be in a book. I wrote this like years ago, but it's one of my favorite, like they're some of my favorite pieces, and I still like to read them to audiences today. And yeah, the last poetry book I put out was before this one. I think it was like 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a while, and that was like my Lana Del Rey themed poetry book. So
wait, your last book came out in 2016?
My last poetry book, yeah.
Oh, I thought your last one was like 2020 or something.
I had, yeah, that's like a novel.
Oh, yeah.
It's not poetry. It's an experimental book, but it's not like a poetry collection. It's about partner abuse.
Is that the book that won some award from the Civil Coping Mechanisms?
No, that's American Mary.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my first novel.
And when you won that award, was that like, was it gratifying? Do you feel like, oh, this is where I should go towards that?
Yeah, it was gratifying, but I also like, maybe I shouldn't say this, but I feel like I like to discount myself like probably too much, where like any achievement I have, I feel like, oh, I got that through nepotism. It's because I like know somebody or like I'm friendly with people. Like anything I've ever gotten, I could just, cut myself down and be like, I might not have gotten that if I wasn't like a friendly person with whoever is, in charge of giving out the awards. So yeah, it felt good, but also it doesn't really feel, I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, like imposter syndrome.
Yeah. I'm writing a Substack post right now about imposter syndrome and how like it could keep you from doing anything if you
True.
just let if you buy into it too much.
How do you fight it with like poetry?
I think just taking the time and making the choice to be deliberate and to actually write something.
So did you ever have a, do you feel like you've had to make your own community, or did you find a group of people, or did you ever lose a community too?
Yeah, I feel like I love making community and bringing people together. It's one of my favorite things is putting together a celebration for other people to partake in and bring people together. So people who might not normally talk to, each other can find community together. And I love it when I have an event and I see two people talking and then they become friends after that event. Like that is, I love that. It's one of my favorite things. And so yeah, I think I do love making community. I also, I'm kind of like, I don't think I'm prickly, but I like am not very friendly when it comes to like just going up to people at random things, and like I guess I try, but it's very hard for me to do that. Just like the fear of rejection and like I think everyone's had an experience where they wonder afterwards, like, did I come on too strong to that person? Like, do they think that I'm a big dork because I like went over and said like, oh, I loved your set, whatever. I try to do that still, but like it's hard for me to like really come out of my shell unless I have like a friend with me at a party or an event or something like that. I love extroverts because I am not extroverted. I'm like a wannabe extrovert. So if I'm with someone who's extroverted who like is very easy to like bring to events and like because they're just gonna talk to people
Like
and
Theo.
oh yeah, Theo is like one of my favorites. Like if I see Theo at an event, I'm like I just want to stand next to you and.
It's true. What did you think of him when you first met him?
I thought he was lovely. Yeah, and he like I have him as a character in this novel that I'm trying to like sell right now.
Can you read some of
I could.
Let's go.
You want me to read it?
Yeah, some of it.
I'll read you like my little I have like a cold open.
Okay.
Pink shards of the day's fading sunlight puncture the dusty plastic Venetian blinds above a plaid couch, casting a pastel lividity on the walls of a small home office. The couch once sat center stage in a living room, hosting movie viewings and Friday night pizza feasts. battered and thready, it's now relegated to a cramped spare room. In a dark plaid shirt and black worn-out skinny jeans, the founder, our antagonist, a young man in his mid-20s, sits at the computer desk adjacent to the couch. He sits like this most days when he is at home. Hunched over, tapping away on the keyboard, headphones strapped to his ears, he appears to be busy. His eyes dart from one monitor to the other and back. On one monitor, the monitor facing away from the door, a video plays. Shot from below, in the point of view of a person laying on the floor, a large-breasted woman wearing blue spandex shorts and a black crop top stands and stomps her feet, as if to give the viewer the sensation of having their face and body trampled on. The video plays muted, on loop. On the second monitor, his Facebook timeline, a row of chat boxes blink and pulse with new messages. "What are you doing tonight?" pops up on the screen. He clicks into the box to show he's read it, but doesn't reply. He clicks on another, where a month-long and frequently updated back and forth has cultivated, and types a new message to reopen the conversation. "Thinking about you." Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah.
The recipient immediately reads it and starts typing a response. The sight of the bouncing ellipses makes the close-cut hairs on the back of his neck prickle. The chat box pulses. "I miss you," it says. "I made this today for you," it says, then follows up with a link to a post on Twitter. Clicking the link, he's directed to a 10-second-long video in which he's tagged, captioned, "MFW, I'm thinking of you." In the video, a 20-something woman with a face painted by a Pre-Raphaelite stands in a garden, head tilted to the sky and smiling. She sways and softly runs her fingers through her long, mousy tresses. "LOL," he replies. Feigning candor like this, knowing the type of response it will usually elicit, is more satisfying than railing a fat line of Adderall. Buzz, buzz, buzz. Next to the keyboard, his phone vibrates, indicating an incoming call. Buzz, buzz, buzz. The screen illuminates. He only glances at it slightly. He knows it's his friend, the balding 40-something photographer. Buzz, buzz, buzz. He lets it go to voicemail. Immediately, it starts buzzing again. A new chat box pops up on his second screen. "I see you're online. I've been trying to call you. Did you pass security yet? They're already starting to board." He clicks the text box to let his photographer friend know that he's read the message, then leans back in his chair and scratches the scalp behind his ear. Little flakes of hair product sprinkle his shoulder. Buzz, buzz, buzz. Buzz, buzz, buzz. He refocuses his dead-eyed attention to the first screen, powerlessly watching the woman's legs tower over him as she simulates mashing his flesh like a tub of grapes. Buzz, buzz, buzz. He clicks the button on the side of the phone to silence it. A new message pops up in the chat box from his photographer friend. "I'm getting on the plane. Hope to see you soon." A small smirk prowls under his nose as he types a reply. "Sorry, I'm going to bail." And with that, he logs off, removes the headphones, rises, and bends over the couch, digging under a cushion to retrieve an orange prescription bottle. Opens it and shakes two pills into his hand, dry swallows, then restores the container in its hiding place. The reflection of your father's face was terrifying in the dark. The voice is dry and shaky. He turns and faces his grandma, standing in the doorway, wearing her purple tracksuit. How long was she standing there? "Do you need a ride somewhere?" he asks her. "It's getting late." By this time, she's normally in her room watching 90 Day Fiancé with the new boyfriend he helped find for her on eHarmony. The boyfriend isn't here tonight, so her routine must be thrown off. "Oh, no, nothing like that," she says, looking down the hallway. "But would you happen to be heading over by Chick-fil-A tonight? I'm in the mood for one of those salads." "Sure, Grammy, I can get you one." He turns toward the computer to reconfirm the screens are powered off and grabs his phone from the desk. Grammy clasps her hands together. Oh boy, and you should get one for yourself as well. You haven't left this room all day. I have to work. I'm building something important. I know you are, dear, she says, backing away from the doorway. She shuffles down the hall and returns with two $20 bills. She hands the money over to him, then clasps her hands over his fist. And one of those lemonades, too. Once again, he is alone. Before leaving the house to head out to the drive-thru, he checks his phone. His signature compulsion, swiping through notifications, ignoring the 10 incredulous texts from his photographer friend, who is now going on a trip to Tulum by himself. He chuckles and starts a new chat with a new woman, some artsy type he added on Facebook several months ago. A green dot next to her profile picture in Messenger lets him know she's online. Thinking we should go here someday, he types, then sends a screenshot of a boomer commenting, when are you going to have the navy bean soup again? On the Facebook page of Dino's Family Restaurant. Jumping ellipses, she's typing something. Another little jolt of electricity shocks through his body. Thinking about those beans, she types back. That's it. That's
really
the,
good.
Thank you.
No, when I post this, do you not? I won't post your kid.
Oh, it's okay.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah,
your
it's
baby
fine.
Is adorable. I'm not
thank
one
you.
For like saying kids are adorable. I think they all look the same, but your kid's like really adorable.
Yeah, she's like the textbook cute baby.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Now, how do you write and have a kid?
It's really hard. Mm-hmm. I think I was like really in a good place where I was getting a lot of writing done right before she was born.
Mm-hmm.
And now like I don't have any time to myself and it's okay. I like try to get stuff done while she's napping. It's kind of like, am I going to do chores right now or am I going to try to work on this manuscript or write a blog post or something like that? But I'll have more time soon. Like when my oldest was, yeah, when she, after she turned one, they just become a little less mommy dependent and can spend time with other people. But this one, she like doesn't really let anybody else hold her. So it's all mommy all the time. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's a time to cherish that, you know.
Yeah.
It doesn't last forever. And I do what I did during when my oldest was still a baby. I just like, I'm walking around, I'll just dictate stuff on my phone and store it away for later.
Oh, that's cool. That's a good idea.
So
after you had kids, did the point of writing change, like psychologically or anything? Or like the object or subject, I don't know, anything.
I think I'm always just trying to scratch some like elusive itch with writing. It's, yeah. I don't know if it changed so much what I want to write about. I think my priorities are definitely different.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like it's so important for me to like always be working on something. It's okay to like give yourself time and like do other stuff in life. You know, I think I'll always write. But I think I used to feel like extremely competitive about it. not necessarily with other people, but just with myself. Like, I can always do something better. I can always get published in something better and, you know, write something bigger, get a better audience or bigger audience or whatever. But I don't really think about that so much anymore. Like, someone posted something on Substack about how, like, publishing is just a way to make friends. And I think I really resonate, like, that really resonates with me. Like, I just want to, like, continue to strengthen my bonds with other people and find other writers who, you know, have similar values and just want a better world, you know?
Well, I think I'll let you go so you can take care of your kid. Are there any people you want to shout out? Your peers or books you're reading or anything?
I'm not reading anything right now. I have Sam Heap's book. I'm going to read that book soon. Their new one, The Living God. So shout out to them. Reading is hard
right now.
But I read Substacks all the time, so
your book sounds really good though.
Thank you.
I really like it.
I'm hoping somebody will pick it up.
Would you ever self-publish?
I don't want to. I feel like, yeah, I was forced to self-publish my last book because the press I published it with, A Place of Healing, Something He Said to You, went out of business like 2 days after my publication date. So they were like, do you mind if you can host it on your own KDP site? And I was like, okay.
That's dumb.
Yeah, and I think it's such a good book. I would love it to, like, you know, find an audience. I think it deserves one.
Do you have any connections from publishing your first novel that won an award? Like the Civil Coping. I know that's out, no longer around.
Yeah.
But do you have any connections with them? Like the Sidelinger guy?
No, I don't. I mean, I could probably reach out.
I don't think he's in the community anymore.
He's in his own community. I think he publishes horror stuff now. Okay. Like it's like he's part of the horror community, but he's still tight with Leza, I think.
All right. So, any last thing you want to say about your book or anything?
Yeah. It's good. Thanks, Brian, for publishing this.
You should publish with them, with your fictional.
You think I should?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe I will.
Yeah, you should.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. I was trying to go the route where I was, like, trying to find an agent because my friend who read the book and proofread it told me that, like, I could publish with a big festival. So that's been kind of my mindset, like, the past 2 years. Like, I'm going to get an agent for this book, and I'm going to publish with a big five and get a publicist, and I'm going to have, like, a billboard in New York City with my book, and I'm going to get, like, a movie deal where it, like, gets turned into a Netflix movie, and Keira Knightley now.
Hey, man, if you have that belief, just go for that then, maybe.
Yeah.
Keep fighting for it. Just like, you know, Shai Watson, that's what she does. She's always fighting for her books.
Yeah. And I talked to Shai about, like, finding an agent, how it's done, and got some good feedback and tips.
What did she say?
I mean, she liked my query letter. Mm-hmm. She thought it was good. and I think it's just going that route is just such a gamble for everybody involved. And unless you're writing something that is extremely culturally relevant at that very moment, and it's something that they think they could make a lot of money on. It's extremely difficult. So at this point, yeah, I think it just deserves to be out in the world. I just had like really lofty expectations for this book because I think my friend gassed me up too much, and that idea just never has left my head. Like, oh yeah, like this is definitely going to get like on the New York Times bestseller list. Like, but you know, who cares? I do think it would be cool to make it a movie. I talked to the filmmaker friend about, you know, doing that, like turning it into a movie. So maybe that will happen, but yeah.
Now, who would play Theo's character?
Theo, for sure.
Yeah, totally. That would be exciting. All right, I'll let you go.
Have a good
This
night. Thank you so much.
is,
Your
you too.
question's really good.
Oh, thank you. This is awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.